Welcome to Harlow on Healthcare. I'm David Harlow, and I invite you to join me by my virtual hearth as I sit down with healthcare leaders to discuss building the future of healthcare. Today, my guest is Greg Johnson, CEO of LifeLink. He is a Silicon Valley veteran with over 25 years of experience across verticals, including customer relations management, logistics, supply chain management, other related companies in the Silicon Valley area. Greg, welcome to Harlow on Healthcare. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, David. Good to be here.
So I will delve into one other note in the bio that I've read, which is that you started out with a BA in English, and my undergraduate studies were in history and literature, and got to wonder, how did we end up here?
So yeah, how does that?
Can you give me a little bit of a sense of, you know, what was the arc from being an English major to where you are now with LifeLink, which I should say is a chatbot platform looking to improve patient engagement with providers, pharma companies, researchers?
Yeah, well, it certainly wasn't a straight line. I don't think when I was studying English at the University of California, Davis, many years ago, that I thought I would end up in healthcare, IT, tech, entrepreneurial pursuits. But I really do. I think shortly after getting out of Davis, I ended up finding my way into a technology company in the relational database world. Now, these were the first big changes in technology here in the Bay Area, where you had companies like Ingress and Oracle and Informix and Sybase were really growing up to dominate a new kind of database layer or market. And I bounced around across technology companies, held positions in product management and sales and marketing, and then back in 2000, ended up starting a company in the supply chain space along with some of my colleagues, and built a very big, successful company that orchestrated commerce at a global scale across large networks of companies. And when that reached its end, we ended up exiting the company. It was a good exit for us, but we went in different directions. And then I started to get very interested in healthcare and the healthcare industry. And in 2016, jumped into an opportunity with a group of folks starting LifeLink. And the whole idea there was and is building a very different kind of patient experience technology, you know, one that's conversational, simple and smart, but can be deployed at scale. So I think in some ways I found my way home, that the English and writing passion that I had way back then I now find myself running a company that is automating how patients get guided and how you talk to patients through chat, through complicated healthcare workflows to make those workflows more like simple glide paths. So the interface is language, you know, it's writing. And it's and there's a big dimension of well-designed language as well in the solution. So gone are the days of complicated interfaces with lots of buttons and menus and things to learn. You know, the language is the simplest and the original interface. So if you can find a way to really leverage it, it can be huge in terms of reducing friction, making things more engaging, and delivering, you know, good results for consumers when they're trying to do complicated things.
So you can hide the levers and buttons and the gears, it sounds like, behind that sort of human-friendly interface, which is a step forward, right? Because we've all experienced these horrible interfaces, right?
That's right. That's a good way of saying it. In some ways, this is not exactly the right analogy, but in the same way that Google with its single search bar with sort of or search entry box was so revolutionary and so simple, but all the gears and complexity and machinery behind it, which is intense and vast, is hidden. This is exactly what we're talking about when we talk about digital conversations. So the check-in that you might get as a patient, which is, looks like you're trying to schedule an appointment with your primary care physician. How does Tuesday at 4 o'clock look? That looks great. Okay, I've got it booked. I'll keep you posted. That little move can be very, very simple and fast and done on the time scale of the patient, But to orchestrate it behind the scenes is complicated. You know, it requires a vast machinery. And that's exactly what we're trying to pull off here at LifeLink.
Right. So what you describe is sort of this conversational back and forth. And I imagine that it works as I often am texting with someone, say texting with a family member, and we each of us get pulls in a different direction. So we lose the thread for 20 minutes or whatever, but then we can just pick up the text conversation, right? And that could work in this context as well, I imagine, as opposed to being on a website. And I've done the first of many, you know, form fills or drop down menus, mm-hmm. and then I get distracted and I get bogged out and I have to start again.
Right, right. Or to make it even more extreme, you know, the other kind of engagement is human to human, synchronously, you know, mm-hmm. waiting on hold to talk with a patient access agent. And of course, you might think, oh, well, that's the gold standard. Obviously, people want to talk to people. In our experience, it's not true. There are hundreds of tasks and interactions that consumers actually prefer not to do with another person in real time because it's easier, faster, and there's a lot less social friction to do it with a digital assistant. And you know, one of the good examples of that is filling out forms or being interviewed or doing intake or filling out, you know, responding to questionnaires. So when you call a customer service hotline because you had an appliance breakdown in your house and you wait for 11 minutes to talk to somebody, which is aggravating. And then when you do talk to somebody, the first 4 minutes are spent filling out that sort of virtual or conversational form. You know, what's your first name? What's your last name? What's your address? What's your phone? That is not a great experience to do with a human. But when you do it with a digital assistant, all that social friction goes away. And we see in our data now that it's a much, much better way to handle tasks like that. And they can be asynchronous. So you don't have to do them at the same time. You don't need two humans to be available at exactly the same time. You just need the consumer to be ready. And then the conversation can happen automatically whenever the consumer's ready. So that's a really powerful dimension of virtual or telemedicine, which is the asynchronous nature of it, that these conversational engagements, they're on demand and they're ready to go whenever the consumer is ready. Another human on the other side of the fence does not have to be ready to have that conversation. Mm-hmm.
So that sounds like a lot of administrative simplification, so to speak. But how does that translate to things like closing gaps of care or, you know, improving outcomes? How do we take the leap to the next level?
Yep. Well, let's remember, first of all, that a massive amount of the treasure, the capital, the spend of a large healthcare system is spent on administrative tasks and duties.
Sure.
So let's just say something very obvious, which is if economically you can make a massive shift in how to get that work done, which, by the way, is not exactly the work that humans are great at. You know, we're talking about work that is rote, repetitive, quite frankly, robotic, and it burns humans out. So if you can find a way to move a lot of that repetitive, rote, procedural work off to this other high preference channel, high scale, lower cost channel, and then deploy your humans in the areas that they're great at, which is empathetic, discernment, working the edge cases, this is where humans ought to be deployed. So we've got sort of a two or three pronged benefit that becomes very clear to large healthcare systems in the delivery of care and improving outcomes for patients. One is that the institutions themselves can be economically much healthier and begin to devote their energies and treasure to the areas that matter the most to the patient. The second is the modality that we're talking about is a better modality. It's more convenient. It's preferred in many of these cases. So the consumer experience, the patient experience goes up. And third, and maybe not so obvious, is if you're using this technology the way that LifeLink has used it, to build broad solutions around really high value workflows that, you know, and we're talking about things like automating the intake and the virtual experience heading into a clinic visit and avoiding a waiting room, for example, and completing all your forms. If you're building solutions around these workflows, what you're also doing in this technology is digitizing all the interactions, the decisions, the choices, the behavioral preferences that happen in a conversation. And that data about what's working and what's not working, what patients like, what they don't like, why they're late, why they missed an appointment, when they need a ride, when they don't, all that data becomes very, very valuable data to drive insights and improvements in the broader macro trends of healthcare. So if we want to learn and we want to
how do we extract insight, how do we extract that? How do we extract that kind of information?
Yeah, so that's a lot of what improve. We do. Right. That's exactly the adventure that we're on at LifeLink, which is we're not just automating these patient engagement workflows with grippy, high experience digital conversations. We're capturing and persisting the data about those conversations. So when a patient lingers over a chat bubble or asks a question three times or, you know, delves down into an area of the conversation, all that is persisted and captured to the benefit of the healthcare institutions we work with so that they can mine it for insights on improving the outcome, improving the experience of the patient. So it's really rich, well-instrumented data. And LifeLink is as much a process automation platform as it is a data and insights platform. So we use data science and machine learning and analytics to look at trends like what does drive a patient to not show up for an appointment? You know, what are the things we're seeing? Is it weather related? Is it age related? Is it zip code related? And you can't get to those kinds of insights unless you have this level of micro data, you know, really rich contextual data about what consumers are doing in workflow, in a specific workflow, a specific protocol. And then you marry that data with their demographic detail and their clinical detail. So obviously, you know, everything we do here at LifeLink is we're handling PHI, you know, we're dealing with patient information that has to be very, very locked down. So everything we do is tight and HIPAA compliant. For that reason, we're only focused on healthcare. And the platform itself has to be really oriented around that. But picking up the large data sets and then putting analytics and data science above it is what allows us to unlock a lot of those insights.
If you're just tuning in, this is Harlow on Healthcare, coming to you on Healthcare Now Radio. I'm David Harlow, and my guest today is Greg Johnson, CEO of LifeLink. Greg, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the different sorts of applications that your customers are putting your technology to work, you know, in order to solve. What is the use case, or what are a handful of use cases that we're talking about? I imagine some of this is just sort of appointments, as we talked about, but I imagine we go beyond that in terms of some care management tools or processes that could be used as well. And that's really maybe in the healthcare provider or hospital context. And I'd like to get a sense of sort of how your market breaks down, you know, between healthcare providers and other parts of your customer base.
Yeah, sure. And we are in multiple markets. Healthcare providers, large healthcare systems or integrated delivery networks are, you know, one of the major markets for us. Mm-hmm. And for listeners that want to dive down into some of what we're doing specifically and how our customers talk about what they're doing with us, The LifeLink website is great for that. There are testimonials and podcasts and demos about a lot of what we're doing with companies like, or institutions like, Banner Health out of Phoenix and Memorial Health Systems out of Springfield, Illinois. But we also focus on pharma. Pharma's another market for us. And if you think about the work that pharma companies are doing in clinical trials right now, large-scale clinical trials, which are in the spotlight everywhere right now, The conversational modality or use case there becomes really obvious if what you're trying to solve for is getting patients who have enrolled or maybe screened into a clinical trial to get scheduled to a first office visit. So the same kind of inbound visit preparation, registration, consent, reminder flow that you might see in a healthcare system clinic visit is also true over in the pharma world with clinical trials, because those same patients, or the same sort of flow is happening to patients going into a clinic to get an injection or to get through a prep consent process at a clinic. So pharma is a is a market for us, and we do work in the clinical trial space, sort of pre or, you know, before broad marketing of a drug or a product. And we also do work in the post-marketing area for call centers like MedInfo call centers, the call centers that are there to answer inbound questions from pharmacists or physicians or patients about dosing or any question about a drug that's been prescribed. And you can imagine, no surprise, but so many of those conversations, almost all of them, are not only scripted and defined, but they have humans reading the scripts on the phone. So they're perfect targets for this modality. So we work in a couple of big sectors, you know, the pharma sector and healthcare systems. And the use cases that we zoom in on are the areas where we can really unlock value. So we've spent time looking at, you know, what are the 10 to 12 big workflow areas in a healthcare system, for example, where we can unlock value. And one of them is, as you might imagine, getting patients ready and getting them to visits, whether they're surgical visits or clinic visits. And there's a lot going on there because, you know, if you kind of look at everything that has to happen to get somebody ready and get them to a visit, it could include all the registration work of completing forms, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 different forms, financial agreements and consent agreements and intake. And if you could move all that workflow to conversations that can happen asynchronously and on a mobile phone in the convenience of somebody's home, and also avoid a physical waiting space while you're at it and helping the patient navigate right to the exam room from their car to the exam room, then you start to solve a really big, previously human-heavy, administration-heavy workflow that every healthcare system needs. So that's one example. We call that the virtual waiting room. That's a solution for getting patients prepped and ready and to visits. And in the time of COVID, it's super appropriate because it's like virtualizing everything. You're virtualizing the paperwork and you're virtualizing the physical waiting room itself goes away and phone calls go away. So it's a really powerful workflow. It's a powerful use case for chatbots and conversational, you know, agents. But we also do workflows coming out of visits. So you think of patients being discharged out of the emergency department. That's a great use case for us. Also out of primary care, getting to a specialist. That transition of care is a complicated moment. And a lot of healthcare systems struggle with the job of trying to get patients to stay in network and to get to their next appointment. You know, you see 40, 50% leakage. That's not uncommon at all for patients who are discharged, given a discharge instruction and a referral to their next visit, to a primary care visit, for example, and they don't follow up. They either go out of network or they forget or they just don't do it. So instead of putting call center teams on that with low hit rate that are expensive, this digital workforce of smart conversational agents can pick up the slack and give a team a lot of scale, 10x, 100x the scale. So we handle, you know, a whole range of workflows, and you can think of LifeLink as a platform that powers a portfolio of these workflows, all kind of operating on the same platform, from, you know, digital front door to pre-visit prep to post-visit follow-up to in-visit experience. You know, that's another area that we focus on, like the emergency room experience of patients. We do this at Banner Health at scale, 28 hospitals, 1 million patient visits a year, a chatbot meeting a patient all the way through the visit. So those are a few of the examples of workflows that we automate.
And how have you or your customers been evaluating this? What do you see, or how do you look at evaluating these changes in the workflow to see if they are improving patient engagement, patient satisfaction, other metrics? What are the other mm-hmm. metrics that folks are interested in?
I mean, patient satisfaction, net promoter score, patient sentiment, these are all good metrics to track in that category or that layer of the value stack, which is, are you improving the patient experience? And that's a valuable lever. I mean, that dimension appears in the value models for every one of our customers, because we're going to be in the patient engagement solution. That's where we play. So one of the ways to check for how you're doing there, you can imagine if there is a baseline today, if systems have been doing spot surveys with clipboards and paper or interviews during a visit or post-visit. And of course, we all know there's a lot of this going on post-visit in organized, structured ways. Then, of course, what we're measuring is improvements above the baseline once you institute the workflow in this next level of engagement. And we do that in large part by simply asking. You can think of checking in with a patient during workflow to say, how are we doing? You know, and that satisfaction check-in could be a very classic Net Promoter check-in on a scale of, you know, 0 to 10. How would you score? Or it could simply be a happy or not question, you know, yes or no, you know, happy or not. And that's a very powerful, simple way to do pervasive satisfaction checking in workflows, is just to go for that smiley face or frown face at the right moment along the way. And if you're doing that at scale, you get a really good pulse of patient satisfaction or sentiment in workflow against time series. So you see that Tuesday afternoon, for some reason, in this particular emergency department, we see a spike in dissatisfaction. And then you can then begin to drill into the rationale. Is the site understaffed? You know, is there something happening that we don't know about? But that checking in for patient satisfaction is one of the big levers. Right.
Do you get involved in looking and sort of iterating and sort of figuring out what's the root cause of that dissatisfaction? Or is that just sort of, you know, the platform is there, your customer can tease that information out, and then they're off to the races figuring out what they need to do?
We're increasingly involved in that discussion, not just because we're involved in setting up the instrumentation to check for it and measure it, but we are accumulating lots of insights about why it might be happening. And we do that because of we've got some of the pattern recognition across multiple institutions.
Right,
and as
we
grow, you know, this is really kind of a broad laboratory of behavioral monitoring and experimentation. One thing about these conversations is they can be remodeled and changed slightly very quickly. They're very flexible. It's not like taking down a whole website and redoing a whole second release on how the thing should work. So one of the big benefits, maybe it's not so obvious to people, but on the data science sort of behavioral assessment side of things, the conversational modality allows you to experiment and change workflow and either cutting out a step or saying it a little bit differently. But more than that, in a sophisticated platform like LifeLink, you can run these in parallel. So you can A/B test. The same way you would run a clinical trial for a vaccine, you can run clinical trials continuously around variations in workflow. And that's a really, really rich set of insights to start to generate if you're deployed in a high volume area. So we're very involved in looking for ways to improve and gather insights to change workflow, change those value levers, which we talked about one, you know, the patient satisfaction. But there are also things like 30-day readmission. You know, what are we doing to keep patients from not coming back to the hospital? How do we keep them safe and happy? And how do we preempt? So there are just dozens of these moments, whether it's actual clinical outcomes or patient satisfaction or even what we do to convert. You know, when you think about appointment requests and appointment scheduling, it's classic funnel stuff. Right? You've got somebody who starts a form, wants an appointment, but doesn't finish the form and drops out of the website. So what if it's a conversation? You know, what if you were to make that a much more engaging, iterative conversation that's actively, you know, working with a patient the way a human would? What does that do to the conversion? And what we found in a lot of those flows is that there are moments where a question is being asked, where a consumer drops off because they were spooked by the question. They didn't understand why they're asking about an automobile accident right here. So a conversational bot can preempt that and explain why we're asking the question. And that will change the conversion metrics and keep people in the conversation longer. So funnel metrics for converting, for completing workflow are also really important value metrics. And they translate to the very things that you're trying to accomplish, like getting a patient who's been discharged out of the ED to their primary care visit. And if you can't convert them to that visit, you're going to see network leakage, and that has financial ramifications that are significant. So we track that as part of our value case.
Right. Well, Greg, to wrap things up, I want to ask you my final question, which is, if you were to wake up tomorrow and find yourself 5 years in the future, what's one thing in healthcare that you would hope or maybe expect to find has changed drastically?
I'm such a disciple and devotee to this massive change in consumer experience. Our vision for that future is that it is massively easier to interact with your healthcare system, and you do it with a conversation whenever you need to. And it covers just about everything you need to do to interact, except the actual physician conversational physician visit. So all the administrative work of interacting, checking, getting ready, following up, following directions, all that is hyper, hyper easy. That's we're a long way from that. So it's a lot to do in 5 years, but if I were to kind of wave my wand and wish for something, it would be that, you know, suddenly the healthcare experience becomes a super, super easy, frictionless glide path for every consumer who cares.
Well, great. Sounds like something worth looking forward to. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you. Good meeting you. I enjoyed the conversation.
You have been listening to Harlow on Healthcare. Join us at healthcarenowradio.com. Let's continue the conversation on building the future of healthcare together at #HarlowOnHC. I'm David Harlow, keeping the fire going and holding a seat open for you. Until next time.